Essential Pest Control leaves bugs belly up.
With science.
You mean you don't use a shoe?
No, we use the latest in technology and innovation to eliminate bugs, termites, weeds, and more.
No spray cans and lighters?
None of that. Only solutions that target insect biology, using chemistry to help protect the environment, people, and their pets.
Huh. Essential Pest Control leaves bugs belly up. Call 886-3029 or visit EssentialPest.com.
Hey, what are you doing out here in the storm?
Please don't say that someone told me to go fly a kite.
Hey, I know you. You're Benjamin Franklin. What's with the kite?
I'm trying to harness electricity.
Hey, Mr. Franklin, you know, you succeeded. We even have electric cars now.
That sounds like a very bad idea.
You know, if it wasn't for you, many of us couldn't read. You invented the bifocal.
I guess you could say I made a spectacle of myself.
Hey, did you know that you're featured on our $100 bill?
It's a horrible likeness. Now, there's some men I'd like you to meet. You know, John Adams, James Madison. You've heard of them, correct?
Of course I've heard of them. Honey, wake up. I just met Benjamin Franklin.
I told you not to eat that kitchen sink pizza before you went to bed.
We owe a lot to Benjamin Franklin. Consider Perfection Auto Works for all your electrical automotive repair needs. From a check engine light to a smoked electrical harness. Call 323-8650 and perfectionautoworks.com.
This is Eb Wilkinson of Wilkinson Wealth Management, where we manage money for gun owners. Some advisors say they do everything. Take that with a grain of salt. In fact, take it with a whole salt mine. We specialize in guiding you to retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. We refer you to other services so that we have no conflicts of interest. Reach us at 777-1911. That's 777-1911 or WilkinsonWealthMGMT.com.
Welcome back to Hour 2 of the Inside Track. Eb here along with Bruce in the KVOI studios. Producer Tom is behind the glass. Thanks for listening to us on your radios and smartphones while running around town or doing chores at home. As always, we invite your questions and comments for our guests at 520-790-2040. You'll notice we have no Harris ads interrupting Inside Track. We own our own show, and we don't allow any Democrat ads on Inside Track.
Yeah!
Woo-hoo! Before we begin second hour festivities, this hour is brought to you by my company, Wilkinson Wealth Management, Essential Pest, Perfection Auto Works, and Tucson Iron and Metal Retail. We've also got a new sponsor, Paul Ash Commercial Real Estate. Bruce's three-generation family-run company now offers commercial office and retail leasing services, as well as investment sales and brokerage, in addition to their seven-decade reputation as professional managers in Arizona and across America. Call them at 795-2100 and ask for John Yarborough or David Carroll. We support all these locally owned businesses, so should you. Our next guest is Ilan Berman. Ilan Berman is a senior vice president of the American Foreign Policy Council in Washington, D.C., an expert on regional security in the Middle East, Central Asia, and the Russian Federation. He's consulted for the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency, as well as the U.S. Departments of State and Defense, and has also provided assistance on foreign policy and national security issues to a range of governmental agencies and congressional offices. He's been called one of America's leading experts on the Middle East and Iran by CNN. Ilan, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Oh, my pleasure.
Yeah, lots of news from the Middle East right now. This past week, Iran launched its second aerial attack this year on Israel with 200 ballistic missiles. How likely is it their attack directly linked to the attack on Hezbollah leader Nasrallah and his leadership about a week ago? Or is this a separate escalation of Iran's hot war against Israel?
Oh, no, no. I think it's directly linked, and it's Iran trying to solve a problem that they're having. Because what we've seen, so we are now at the anniversary, the one-year anniversary of October 7th, which was this catastrophic tragedy for Israeli society, but it was also a mortal blow to Israeli deterrence, right? This was an event where during the course of the day, you had, you know, multiple systems break down, you had the government sort of not function the way it should, you had intelligence failures and security failures. And ever since then, the Israelis have been trying to rebuild, reconstitute their deterrence. This is what is driving their ongoing war in the Gaza Strip, and it's what has really propelled them into conflict with Hezbollah in the north of the country, because Hezbollah is more powerful, stronger than Hamas is, and they know that they need to erode Hezbollah capabilities, and they know that they need to create a new status quo in the north. Hezbollah plays a really important role on two fronts, right? They are the chief terrorist proxy of Iran. They have pride of place. Iran has a lot of terrorist groups that it supports, but Hezbollah is the most important one. And it's also Iran's insurance policy, because it has this massive arsenal of short-range rockets and ballistic missiles that Iran can turn on and off like a switch to hold Israeli population centers at risk. So all of that is unacceptable to the Israelis. The Israelis have to move a lot of displaced people back into the north. And so what they're doing against Hezbollah is really eroding Hezbollah capabilities, but it's also striking a blow to Iran. So when Iran struck Israel earlier this week, it was its own attempt to sort of restore its own deterrence, to restore its own security, because the Israelis had really done a number. They had eliminated the upper and middle management of Hezbollah over the course of 2 weeks, and this was a catastrophic blow.
And with that being said, Israel really appears to have demonstrated a lot of restraint after Iran's attacks, given that they've not yet launched any attacks directly against any major Iranian civilian targets or their strategic military sites. So how likely is it that Iran's nuclear facilities might be targeted soon, and what form might that take?
Well, there's a couple things there, right? So we have to differentiate between civilian targets and military or government targets. I think the Israelis are going to try to avoid civilian targets as much as possible, but an Israeli retaliation is 100% coming, because what the Israelis want more than anything else is not to allow what is happening now to be the new normal. If the Israelis don't hit back, they're creating a new level where it's okay for Iran or for some other hostile country to target Israeli territory directly. They can't stand for that. And so we haven't seen the retaliation yet, but it's assuredly coming. What form that's going to take, I think, remains to be seen. The Biden administration is trying really hard to shape how Israel responds and what it targets when it does respond. Because above all, as we've seen over the last several months, the thing that the White House wants the most is to avoid a conflict in the Middle East. But the Israelis have their own calculus. And one of the most important things that they're worried about is they're worried about the Iranian nuclear program. They're worried about the fact that Iran has been developing a nuclear capability for the better part of a quarter century. Iran is very far along this path, and somebody has to do something about the Iranian nuclear program. And if you're Israeli and you're looking at the current state of affairs, there has never been a greener light for Israel to reach out and do something to delay Iran's nuclear processes. So I think that's very, very likely.
This is Bruce Ash. Thanks for joining us, Ilan. Newsweek just posted your opinion piece where you wrote, "The scope of the challenge is daunting. Whoever ends up winning the White House next month will need to reframe the way America thinks about great power competition in order to adequately respond to the collective threat now posed by Moscow, Beijing, and Tehran." Can you elaborate there?
Sure. Well, the problem that I'm seeing, and this is sort of very, very evident among people I talk to in Washington, is that we are still talking about Russia and China and Iran and the threats they pose as separate things. And we're really, I think that's a mischaracterization. I think you're seeing more and more collaboration between the three countries on everything from joint military exercises to disinformation to economic warfare, right? I mean, what you're seeing is this really ominous convergence, this authoritarian axis that's beginning to form. And that's hugely significant, because what that actually means is that we are racking and stacking the threats totally wrong. Because if you think back to the national security strategy of the Trump administration, and a lot of which, even though they'll never say it publicly, was adopted by the Biden administration, including the idea of great power competition with China. But the reality is, we are spending a lot of time talking about China, We're not competing quite as well as we should with China. But we're also not competing as well as we should with Russia, and we're really not competing at all with the Iranians. But more and more, we're seeing that these countries, these authoritarian regimes, are collaborating with one another and collaborating with one another against us. So it forces us to sort of to re-rack, to reframe great power competition so that we have a better understanding of the fact that, you know, for the first time in our history, we are facing not one, not two, but three imperial revivals, right? Attempted imperial revivals. We should have enough resources. We should have enough political will to be able to deal with it. But that starts with understanding.
How likely is the election next month going to decide if the United States is still prepared to serve as the arsenal of democracy, do you think?
Well, I think it depends. Certainly, personnel is policy. And so you can, you know, most manifestly, you could sort of see that you're going to have more continuity than change on Russia policy if Vice President Harris becomes president. If either one becomes president, you're going to have more continuity than change on China, right? I think, you know, it's a at a time when there's not a lot of things that Democrats and Republicans agree on, the idea that we need to compete with China is one of the things that actually, you know, the two parties really agree on. But I think you're going to have a world of difference on Iran policy, for example. And the Iranians, by the way, are gaming this, and they're gaming this very shrewdly. So the new Iranian president, Masoud Pezeshkian, when he was at the UN General Assembly last month in New York, he actually made a public statement and he gave an interview and he said, you know, my government is ready to re-enter negotiations with the United States. That's something that they've tried and they've managed to carry out very successfully, right? They're playing for time. And he's playing for time because he knows that there's a possibility that come January, there's going to be an administration in Washington that's going to be very, very credulous, and they're going to want to resume those talks.
So I want to go back to this idea about the United States or the West being an arsenal of democracy. Even if President Trump is reelected next month, it's going to be pretty difficult to restructure that arsenal of democracy because we've offshored so much of our military capacity to, for example, build ships. We're single sourcing different ways of obtaining offensive and defensive military weapons. There's all kinds of procurement red tape and so on. It takes so much longer today to create a new weapon system. How are we really going to be able to in a short period of time represent this arsenal of democracy?
Well, I mean, that's really the $64,000 question. I mean, if you look back at December of 1940, when FDR gave his famous fireside chat when he talked for the first time about America being an arsenal of democracy, 5 years later, the United States had fielded over 2 million tanks, had fielded hundreds of thousands of aircraft, right? And they were the ones that backstopped the European frontline effort against the Nazis. And so whether or not we can do that, I think remains to be seen, right? A lot of it has to do with, you know, the fact that we have a very divided, hyper-partisan political atmosphere. It's very hard to imagine a situation where we all come together to do that once again. But the first step towards solving this problem is realizing that we have an issue. We have not right-sized our military to properly confront the Russia, China, Iran combined threat. And the way we know this is because in Republican circles, in our circles, there are right now a tremendous amount of sort of back and forth and deliberations among folks who say, you know what, we can't do Russia. We can't continue to provide Ukraine with aid because we need to husband our resources in case we have to fight China over Taiwan. Now, that's a valid complaint, but it also highlights that key point, which is that we are in such a resource-constrained state right now that we have to choose, and we shouldn't have to choose.
Well, I'll make one further point maybe before I turn this back over to Eb, Ilan. United States is sort of the progenitor on developing and manufacturing most of the offensive and defensive weapons that we have if there was a kinetic occurrence. Europe's not doing it. And you know, we're spending more money on defense. I mean, we have allies, but it's the United States who really has been put in a position where they have to do it, and the Europeans kind of come dragging along as sort of junior partners. Am I incorrect?
That's certainly true. No, that's certainly true. But I think that the situation is thankfully getting better. So what I mean by this is, if you know, and by the way, this is thanks in no small measure to the tough talk that President Trump did when he was in office. But if you look 4 years ago, only 11 NATO members were meeting that 2% defense, you know, 2% of GDP defense spending threshold that the U.S. had been clamoring about forever. Last year, or this year, when they met in Washington in over the summer, 22 of the alliance's countries have sort of announced that they had met that threshold. So Europe is beginning to recapitalize, right? So that's definitely good news, and it takes some of the burden off of us. The second point is that a lot of this stuff isn't necessarily hard power. It's also soft power, right? It's informational. It's cyber. It's stuff that doesn't require us to ramp up production lines, because you're totally right. Our production lines have atrophied. Our supply lines and supply chains need to be reconstituted. It's going to take time. Thankfully, this conflict is happening across multiple domains. And the first step towards a dominant position really is recognizing that we have a problem and recognizing that we have to mobilize for it.
So Bruce is talking about kinetic warfare. If there's kinetic warfare conducted against America, who's most likely to do it? Russia, Red China, Iran, North Korea?
Well, that's a good question. I have a friend. The question reminds me. I have a friend who's a historian. He says, "Listen, I'm a historian, and even I get it wrong half the time." So I don't know that I would hazard a guess. I can only point out that what we are in right now, particularly in Europe. I just got back from sort of a week trip to the continent, particularly in Eastern Europe, and I was really struck by the immediacy of the Russia threat, meaning the conviction on the part of Central and East European states that what we're seeing in Ukraine, unless the Russians are stopped in Ukraine, is coming soon to a theater near you. Right? There's this, I think, very erroneous thought that permeates certain circles in Washington. You know, why don't we just sort of force the Russians and the Ukrainians to hammer out some sort of modus vivendi and just be done with this? That would be really nice if it was true, but it completely undersells the Russian imperial impulse. And all of these countries that had previously been swallowed up by either the Russian Empire or by the Soviet Union in Europe are saying, you know what, Ukraine is just the appetizer. There's going to be a sort of a first course and a second course. And we're worried that if we don't stop Russia in Ukraine, we're going to have to fight them. And we might have to fight them as NATO, as an alliance, and America's part of that alliance. So I think all of this is linked. I think it's very hard to identify who's the biggest threat, but it's all connected. If we show weakness in the Middle East, it rebounds to our detriment in Europe. If we do it in Europe, it rebounds to our detriment in the Indo-Pacific, right? There's no substitute for seriousness.
No, you've got Putin wanting to get the band back together. You know, if he takes over there, then he's going to go to Poland, then he's going to go to you know, Kiev, all the other places. Earlier this week, when missiles were flying into Israel, President Biden said that America would support Israel's right to defend themselves. But the very next day, he and Democrat nominee for president both cautioned against striking Iran directly, and just this morning criticized Israel for hitting oil facilities in Yemen. How right. likely is it that Israel will follow such instructions from Washington?
I think less and less so, frankly. I think what we've seen over the last year has been an attempt by the White House really to throw some grit in the gears of the Israeli military and, you know, slow them down in the Gaza Strip. And it did so at great cost, right? At great cost in terms of Palestinian lives, and also at great cost in terms of Israeli efficiency. And I think as we are moving into the Northern Front in Lebanon, as we are moving into the possibility of a wider war with Iran, the Israelis are listening to that advice less and less. And from where I'm standing, that's a very good thing, because Israel right now, what it's done over the last month has been really a remarkable feat of attrition in terms of attriting the capabilities of very formidable adversaries. Israel should not slow down this pace. In fact, a lot of our security in the Middle East and the security of American allies in the Middle East depends on Israel being Israel and Israel being allowed to take the lead in this sort of thing. Because let's be clear, the Iranian regime is a challenge. It's a challenge first and foremost to Israel, but it's also a challenge to the United States and our allies in the region. And if somebody doesn't deal with it, we're going to have to.
So what do you think the administration's reply is going to be for that disobedience from Israel?
Well, I think it remains to be seen. I think it's going to be very hard for the White House to really come out publicly and come out swinging against the Israeli government, because right now the Israeli government is the aggrieved party, right? They were struck by almost 200 missiles. But nonetheless, they're trying to shape what Israel does when it inevitably retaliates, you know, whether or not it hits oil facilities, whether or not it hits nuclear facilities. I think from the Israeli perspective, looking at this sort of interconnected set of challenges, the less Israel listens to American calls for restraint, the better, because not only do they need to, in a physical way, get rid of the Iranian strategic threat, right? And that includes Iran's nuclear program, but the harder they hit back, the more deterrence they rebuild. So going soft, going weak, as the White House is counseling, is a recipe for future aggression from Iran.
Ilan, the IDF has been spending significant amounts of ordnance since 10/7 defending itself. It's been reported that Biden-Harris have been holding back on some of their promises of arms sales to Israel. But if the IDF continues to pound away at enemy targets, some are concerned about the IDF being able to continue if arms run short. We talked about it earlier with the United States. How likely is it Israel has maybe reversed engineered sophisticated arms and manufacturing on U.S. arms supplied to Israel? Or could they possibly be importing arms from other allies? And this is, I think, kind of a provocative question, including China, considering the fact that they have sort of a quid pro quo with China over their purchase of the Haifa ports.
Well, listen, I think they might be importing from other countries, but I don't think it's from China, because what we've seen over the last year has been this real awakening in Israel that the Chinese, and traditionally the Chinese have been very good at triangulating between the Arabs on the one hand and the Persians on the other and the Jews on the third, and really triangulating their relations in the region. But over the last year, the Chinese have chosen sides. And it's very, very clear. And the bloom has come off the rose. And if you talk to Israeli officials now, they're pretty unequivocal that China is not considered a friend. That doesn't mean that they're not having some sort of tactical discussions, but I don't think that type of arms relationship is really in Israel's interest. And I think the Israelis understand this. But you're hitting on, I think, a crucial point, which is that even before October 7th, the militants of Hamas, the militants of Hezbollah, had come up with a key understanding, which is that the missiles that they were lobbing at Israel, at Israeli population centers, were comparatively cheap, right? They cost in the hundreds or in the low thousands of dollars, whereas the interceptors that Israel was using to shoot down those same missiles cost something like $60,000 a pop. And so Israel very quickly could get locked into an economic cycle of attrition that requires them to come to the United States to ask for emergency aid, emergency appropriations. That's a really bad place to be. And that's why the Israelis are spending so much time and so much research and development effort on things like laser defense to try to change that equation. But in the middle of a war, it's hard to change that equation. And that has to be a consideration. One of the reasons why, even though Prime Minister Netanyahu and President Biden really don't get along, one of the reasons why the Israelis have been mostly minding their P's and Q's is precisely this. Israel cannot afford a rupture with the United States at this critical time because Israel is not self-sufficient in terms of defense equipment.
Mm. Real quickly, because we're running short on time, talk about Israel, how Israel has so successfully infiltrated the ranks of Hezbollah and the impact not only on short-term Hezbollah military potency, but also their psyche.
Oh, absolutely. This is really What's happened over the last 3 weeks has been really this textbook thing. If somebody presented you with a script about this, and you were a Hollywood producer, you'd say this is too far-fetched, right? One side could not be so dominant. But what we've seen is real wholesale penetration on the part of Israel in the upper echelons, in the procurement chain of Hezbollah, to the point where Hezbollah is on the back foot. It is clearly demoralized, but that doesn't mean the threat is gone, right? And we have to, you know, not be preemptively congratulatory, because Hezbollah has a lot of capabilities and they can still marshal them to very great effect against Israel. But the most important thing, I think, to take away from this is that their traditional role as an insurance policy for the Iranian regime is now in doubt. And the reason that's important is because if you're sitting in Tehran and you're looking at the region, you have always counted on Hezbollah to be your insurance policy, as in you will activate Hezbollah if Israel makes any moves against your nuclear program. Well, all of a sudden, that insurance policy is gone. So I think unless Israel does something decisive, we're about to see an Iranian sprint for the bomb.
Man, those times I wish it were 1978 again. Ilan Berman, American Foreign Policy Council, where can people find your opinion pieces and how do they learn more about the American Foreign Policy Council?
Oh, sure. Well, we're online at www.afpc.org, and they can follow me at Twitter at Ilan Berman, I-L-A-N-B-E-R-M-A-N.
Ilan, thanks for taking time with us today. Happy New Year to you. When we return, Josh Jacobson joins us to discuss our local crime epidemic and answer questions to make Tucson and Pima County safer. No channel flipping. We'll be right back.
Excuse me, where are your quick fix, do-it-yourself cans of Freon for your car?
Aisle 7.
Let's see. The cheapest one is $29.95. Man, $49.95. I'll go with the $29.95. Hey, who are you?
I'm your Perfection Auto Works guardian angel.
And what brings you here?
My wings. What do you mean, what brings me here? I'm here to save you from making a terrible mistake.
That seems a little funny.
What? Funny? Like a clown? Do I amuse you? You have no idea what you're doing. Check out the warnings on this can. It can blow you to bits. It's under pressure. You know how many people have joined me after trying to do it themselves?
So what do I do?
Well, get over to Perfection Auto Works for the $49.95 AC tune-up. I gotta go. Some guy's on a bridge.
Listen to the Perfection Auto Works Guardian Angel. Take advantage of our $49.95 AC tune-up special. 323-8650 and perfectionautoworks.com.
Yeah, funny like a clown, huh?
Essential Pest Control leaves bugs belly up with science.
You mean you don't use a shoe?
No, we use the latest in technology and innovation to eliminate bugs, termites, weeds, and more.
No spray cans and lighters?
None of that. Only solutions that target insect biology, using chemistry to help protect the environment, people, and their pets.
Huh. Essential Pest Control leaves bugs belly up. Call 886-3029 or visit EssentialPest.com.
Customers come first at Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus.
My main goal is to make everything easy for the customer, whether every decision I make in terms of business is, will this make sense for the customer? And is this make it easier for the customer to come and look at material, how the yard is organized, what material we cover, what material we offer, anything like that.
Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus. Call 209-1579. Stop by the yard, 701 East 36th Street. Open Monday through Saturday.
This is Eb Wilkinson of Wilkinson Wealth Management, where we manage money for gun owners. When people turn 50, something miraculous happens. They start to get serious about retirement planning. They've done very well so far and want to be certain they power into the retirement they've earned. Let me guide you to retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
Tucson used to be a city where people felt safe and could raise their family. Today, drug addiction, people living on the streets, and skyrocketing crime threaten our neighborhoods and businesses. Our community is suffering. We deserve better. We need accountability, support, and the enforcement of our laws to make our community safe again. Our city and county leaders need to address these issues now. Make your voice heard.
Welcome back to Inside Track. Eb Wilkinson here along with Bruce Ash. We're coming to you live from the Bustos Media Juggernaut here in Tucson, Arizona. This portion of the program brought to you by Mike Emery at Perfection Auto Works. You may not know this, but there are over 2,000 different auto repair shops in Southern Arizona. Mike's shop, Perfection Auto Works, stands out from all the rest of them. Let him make your auto great again. When you bring your car to Mike, be sure to tell him that Eb and Bruce sent you his way. Josh Jacobson is a familiar name here in Pima County crime prevention circles as one of the leaders of the Tucson Crime-Free Coalition. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks again for having me back, guys.
Crime Stopper.
Well, I don't know. That's up for debate when you look at the streets.
Yeah, so what's new in the world of crime?
Well, what is new? We're seeing more of it, I'll tell you that much. Homicides have now surpassed 2023 rates in the city of Tucson. In the county, we're just about there.
We've got 3 months to go.
County, same thing. We're just about there. In the county, same thing with sexual assaults. Those are, for all of 2023, those were sitting at 54 for the year. We're currently at 52 in the county. We've got 10 homicides. All of 2023 was 11. Inside the city of Tucson, we've seen homicides surpass last year, like I mentioned, and pedestrian fatalities are up, and people are starting to get growingly more and more concerned as they're paying more attention to what they're seeing on the streets.
So how urgent is it that city buses get back on a for-pay basis? I mean, we talked about this yesterday on Wake Up Tucson with Sergio Mendes and mm-hmm. Ted Maxwell, the transportation, you know, needs that the city wants. But, I mean, if you got a bunch of people just being transported to commit crimes from one place to another and they're able to get on there free, if you've got crimes being committed on buses, how safe is it? And why would regular people who actually have to use the bus to go someplace, to go to work, to shop, and so on, how likely is it they're going to be continuing to use the bus?
Well, that's a great point. And we, you know, we've been talking about the issues that the free bus fares have caused. We've called the free buses the free crime bus for quite some time. Mayor Romero actually mocked us and said, this is, you know, I believe it was last year, before they put the free bus fare into the general fund. I mean, that ship has sailed. They're not undoing that. And, you know,
what's that costing the city?
Roughly $15 million a year.
Oh my God!
So, but what is happening though is I'm starting to see on social media people that I wouldn't really expect to start saying, "Hey, we've got a problem at the bus stops." We saw in the city council meeting earlier this last week that for the first time they're starting to acknowledge that fentanyl is a problem at the bus stops. People are smoking it out in the open. I don't know how it's taken them this long.
How have they not seen it?
Well, they have.
They just didn't want to admit it.
That's right. And there's another motive as to why we think that they're starting to talk about these issues more publicly. But also, I was just talking to one of the TPD officers that we're very friendly with. He came in and had lunch the other day, and he was talking about a guy that they were chasing around for the big box stores because he was getting on and off the bus. He would go in, load up merchandise, time when the bus stop came, or when the bus arrived to the bus stop, run out, jump on it, and he's out of the area. But they had some undercovers that were following him, and they ultimately found him. He was pressed up against the glass of this big box store, looking out the window intently. He wasn't looking for officers. He was looking for that bus to show up so that he could run out and jump onto it. So that's some of the things that are happening. And then when you talk about on the bus, we've had, you know, instances multiple times with bus drivers being assaulted, that type of issue. We actually, the Tucson Crime Free Coalition, worked with the Teamsters to support a bill that protects transit workers. It basically escalates them being assaulted to the same thing as assaulting a peace officer or, you know, a federal prosecutor. It's
aggravated assault.
Yeah, exactly.
Are the Teamsters, you know, with their bus drivers, are they beginning to ask questions of the Democrats that they otherwise support in this town because of this?
Yeah, we're hearing from a lot of different places, voices that have been supportive that are not now starting to say we're being failed, we're being let down, we need a change of leadership. And so we need these voices, obviously, to continue to get exponentially bigger because, as we've talked about on this show many times, unfortunately, we have extremely low voter participation. The way our elections are run here locally, we know that they're chock full of issues. So we need this momentum to keep building, and we need people, frankly, we need the Democrats in this town to start holding their own accountable, which they've given them passes for too long. But we're hoping that what's happening is we're seeing this mount.
And with that being said, how important is it that we get Heather Lappinen reelected?
So Heather Lappin is running for Pima County Sheriff. She's been on the department for nearly 20 years. She's currently a lieutenant. She's got the support of the largest deputies union, the Pima County Deputies Organization. So she really needs to get into office for a myriad of reasons. There needs to be a change of leadership. She can build a team. She can put good people around her. But she's also somebody that is open-minded and looking for solutions. So when I bring up solutions, because, you know, we can complain all day, but you guys have had me on. We've talked about the transition center quite a few times on this program.
Right.
And what has really happened there is we've gotten no support from Sheriff Nanos on that program. We're getting very little support.
It's something that should help him. It's in his work, right?
It's on the property. It's, you know, right next to the jail. You would think so.
Has he said anything? Or is he ignoring you?
We've talked to him multiple times about it, and really what we found out was is there just wasn't an interest at that time to get any sort of help. Heather's the type of person that she's going to engage with the community. She's going to look at these type of programs and really start to think outside of the box. She brings a new vision, and it is extremely important to get her elected. And I'll also add that she's getting a lot of support from all organizations and voters across this community, not just Republican, because we have to remember the breakdown of demographics for voters in Pima County is 38% Democrat, 34% Independent, and 28% Republican. So if you're a Republican, you're going to have to be able to build coalitions.
So you've got Heather Lappin getting all the support aside from Sheriff Nanos. Where's Nanos support coming from?
That's a good question. So when you look at the primaries, we saw that the Democrats really circled the wagons around, for instance, Laura Conover, and that ultimately led to Mike Jetty not being successful there by any stretch of the imagination.
And that was sad.
That was very sad. It was very unfortunate. However, we don't really see the same circles coming around Sheriff Nanos, and there's a lot of potential reasons why. We're seeing a lot of scandals. We're seeing a lot of issues inside of the department, low morale. We're seeing situations where he just doesn't have the support of the deputies. And this issue with Deputy Jane, if you guys have recall that situation,
right.
A female corrections officer basically getting raped by a fellow deputy at a Christmas party,
right.
And the lack of attention that brought.
And then the cover-up from the Attorney General's office as well.
Yeah, I mean, that was, you know, a big nothing, right? The opinion of A.G. Mays, and I guess that... it's disappointing, but it's not surprising.
For the people who support females everywhere.
Right.
Not too much support there.
Right. So the Democrats are paying attention to this, you know, and they're looking at this going, look, there's a problem with this leadership. And so I think you're going to start to see more support for Heather coming her way from more Democrat voices. Dr. Richard Carmona just endorsed her and mm-hmm. took part in a press conference that the Tucson Crime Free Coalition held a few weeks ago. Aaron Cross, he's the president of the Pima County Sheriff's Deputies Organization. And he's been very vocal about the issues, but we're also, like I said, we're going to see probably some pretty interesting other folks weighing in on this as well.
We have caller Paul has a question about bus and library safety, especially for children. Paul, go ahead with your question, please.
Yeah, my grandchildren have both been approached by people on drugged out people on buses, and now in libraries. And I'm they are afraid to go to either one, so we might as well shut down the bus lines and the libraries if our citizens cannot use them. And it seems like a simple thing to require people to have card identification cards to get on a bus or to go into a library. Very simple thing.
Yeah, you're Thanks, absolutely, Paul. And that's so that's what Tucson Crime Free has been advocating for. Bring the fares back. Keep the subsidized fares that were there in existence before. But the problem is we have let this get so far out of hand. We bring the fares back, and it's going to come right down onto the driver's heads. Literally. They're going to be getting attacked. They're going to be putting be put in confrontational situations. And they have a policy where they tell somebody once to do something. During COVID, you're not wearing your mask. Put on your mask. The person doesn't comply. That's it. So the conversation at this point is going to also have to have expenditures for security on the buses because it's gotten that bad.
Why would Paul? Why would the kids in your family or any other family want to ride on the buses at this time?
Are you kidding? We've ridden on buses for 50 years. Well, why do we have a bus station if young people can't ride to school and to visit their friends?
Yeah, that's a great point, Paul. And there's an obvious answer there, and I appreciate you pointing that out.
Thanks very much for your call, Paul. Thanks for listening.
Let's go back to Nanos for a minute. Mm-hmm. Talk about the Chris Nanos debates.
Did you guys watch them?
Yeah, part of them.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty interesting. I think that right away you see what kind of a temper and an ego Sheriff Nanos has. And Tim Steller, to his credit, he attended our press conference, and that's where he got the impetus for the article that he wrote that highlighted all of the anger issues that the Sheriff Nanos has, the culture that he's created. When you have somebody like Castigar coming out, that was one of his higher-ups, talking about his situation.
And Rick had been a supporter mm-hmm. of Sheriff Nanos.
Absolutely.
In the past.
You talk about that for people that don't understand what's going on.
Yeah, so in the Tim Steller article, and we at Tucson Crime Free, we have kind of a funny relationship with Tim Steller. You know, he likes to tease us and we tease him back. But if there's a Tim Steller article that I think a lot of people would find interesting, it was probably 2 weeks ago in the Arizona Daily Star.
Yep, it was.
And he actually goes into an in-depth accounting for these allegations that have been brought up by Aaron Cross and many others about the situation of low morale and the way that there's a vindictive and
a toxic culture.
Toxic culture inside of the department. And he really goes in, he interviews Rick Castigar as well as some other people that give detailed accounts verbatim of how things have been run. You know, if you're a private business owner and you had situations like this in your business, you'd be getting sued big time. You know, I mean, there's some serious leadership issues here.
Officers in the field depend upon the support of fellow officers. Mm-hmm. If there is a toxic culture within the organization and dysfunction in terms of how the job goes, how likely is it that we're going to have sheriff injuries? We've had a number of sheriff injuries just in the last few months. Mm-hmm. Can you count upon your fellow officer? Which side of Chris Nanos are you on?
Yeah, you know, I think for the deputies, and I always have to say, we Tucson Crime Free has a tremendous amount of respect for the deputies and the officers of TPD. It is the leadership that is the big issue, and I'm talking about specifically in the Sheriff's Department right now. But Bruce, you're right. We have seen situations where because they don't have enough deputies, violence against deputies has gone up. We've seen the issues in the jail. We know how that's all turned out, and so we are strongly urging people go to Heather Lappin 4. That's the number 4. Sheriff.com. Heather4Sheriff.com.
The number four. So I heard Heather on another show earlier today. I'm glad she's getting on different shows, catering to different listeners around town. She talked about the level of acrimony between Nanos and his upper echelon, filtering down into the officer ranks, and how Nanos has tried to develop these sort of special units, but really what he's done is he's softened up patrol presence on the streets.
Right, and we need that more than ever because, you know, the deputies, it's no secret. You go across River Road heading north, and things are different than they are in the city limits.
Yep.
And the deputies have done a remarkable job trying to push crime back into the city limits. But the thing is they're not going to be able to contain it. So we've got to get the staffing numbers up. We've got to have a department that people want to be at. We can't be losing good deputies to other agencies because they go, you know what? The heck with this. I'm going to Oro Valley. I'm going to Marana.
Which they have.
And they have. They've lost some really remarkable officers in that capacity. Heather talks about a guy that was, you know, one of the highest skilled, best guys for search and rescue. And there was a ton of training and experience in this guy, and he eventually
said, and expense.
And expense.
The expense to train these officers is huge.
Huge. Astronomical. So, you know, the deputies, they're assets, and you don't want to lose them. And the last reason you should want to lose somebody is because of a toxic work environment.
Let's change gears just a little bit. The Romero crime tax, Dems bring in tons of illegals who bring crime, drugs, human smuggling, slavery, homelessness. All of us already have a Romero crime tax on our businesses. And now, because they pay for their pathetic programs on the back of law enforcement funding, we should believe that they'll finally pay attention to control crime by passing an additional sales tax. I don't buy that myself.
I don't buy it at all. So what?
And that sales tax never going away. They're never going to reduce it again.
It's a 10-year, half percentage sales tax. So for the listeners that don't know what Bruce is talking about, because this is fairly new. We're going to see this conversation develop a lot more in the coming months. But the city of Tucson is screaming poverty. Because their $2.4 billion budget, that's billion with a B, folks, billion-dollar budget.
It's up like 80% in the last 3 years.
It's gone from, they've added over $1 billion onto the budget in, just the last recent years. And a lot of it is because, obviously, the federal funding coming from COVID and all of the other resources they pull in. But they're now screaming poverty because they're blaming Governor Ducey and the Republican legislature for enacting the flat tax at the state level. So they're getting $40 million less per year. $40 million less per year out of $2.4 billion. A lot of city managers would say, $40 million, that's a rounding error, right? So now the mayor and council want to have the voters vote on a tax next March. And this tax is called the Quality of Life Ballot Measure to amend the Tucson Charter to provide for community investment.
So they could pick $10 million up just by charging the bus fares again.
$15 million, right?
Or $15 million,
yeah. Right there. And what's packed into this half percentage tax, it would take our tax rate inside of the city of Tucson from 8.7% to 9.2%. And they've got it broken down into different categories. One of them, only one of them, is for TPD and first responders. The rest of it is for housing first types of initiatives.
Which is a bad idea also.
Which is a bad idea. We've already seen that is not working. There's provisions in there for firefighters. There's provisions in there for investments in technology. But here's the thing, folks. Put the topic of the tax aside. The bottom line is that the city charter already provides that the city gives us roads, parks, and police.
That's correct.
That is the bottom line. Those needs are not being fulfilled at this time. We are not getting what we're paying for. And if you don't believe me, just drive around Tucson and open your eyes because you'll see the same thing. So this thing is bad, bad, bad. There's something inside of this tax essentially to offend everyone. And the reason I say that is because obviously if you're part of the business community, tax is not good because, well, it puts us at a competitive disadvantage.
It's a tax on everybody.
It's a tax on everybody. You've got people on fixed incomes that this is going to affect.
And we can't trust them to spend the money on what they're doing now. Why would we want to give them more?
That's exactly right. They're already supposed to.
You don't reward bad behavior, and that's exactly right. What it would be doing.
Let's switch topics. We don't have much time remaining here in the show today, Josh. Prop 312. This is the proposition that talks about reimbursement through refunds on property taxes for damages done and so on to homes and businesses.
Yeah, Prop 312 is another solution that the Tucson Crime Free Coalition has been working on with the Goldwater. They pitched it. We thought it was wonderful. We got behind it. If you go to yesonprop312.com, you'll see one of our videos on there. And really what it's doing is it's a way for residential property owners and business owners to get a refund based upon nuisance issues that the city or county, whichever jurisdiction you're in, has not done a good job mitigating. So basically you fill out a form that would go to the AZDOR, Department of Revenue, and in that form you would have to demonstrate that you've been negatively affected by very, very narrow types of issues. We're talking about people that are urban camping on your property, or some sort of a nuisance that's bringing crime onto your property, which could include drug use, defecating, urinating, break-ins, that type of stuff. And if you can demonstrate that you've been negatively impacted and have had to put money into this, you can put in for a credit for your tax from that jurisdiction.
Talk about the sad story of Patricia Salcido.
You're going to have to remind me about...
This is the woman whose car was stolen.
Oh, yes.
And then used in a street takeover.
Yes. You know, Bruce, that is a really sad situation. And there's a lot more to that story that I don't think I know the entire thing. But if you've been on social media within the last week, you've probably seen one of the most intense street takeovers that happened at, I believe it was 12th and Drexel. And that ultimately the woman that Bruce is referencing, her car was stolen. There was a bunch of stuff in there for her kids. She's a single mom.
They were getting ready to move. There was all kinds of personal items, including all of the pictures of her mother, mm-hmm. kids, and so on, lost forever.
Just terrible. And so the car was stolen. It was used in the street takeover. And ultimately that car was...
set afire.
Yeah. I mean, well, first they beat it to death.
Right.
They beat this car. And then they set it on fire in the middle of the intersection and did donuts around it. And, you know, had just a giant lawless party right in the middle of our streets.
Tell the listeners again how to support Heather Lappin.
That's the number 4, sheriff.com. Heather Lappin, please look her up. And you can also find information about her on TucsonCrimeFree.com, on our newsletters. She's one of our endorsed candidates. And we really need to get her elected so that we can have some new leadership in this area.
And through that website, you can also volunteer for Heather.
You can volunteer, you can donate, open your wallet, throw out some money. It takes money to win elections, folks.
Insiders, that's going to do it for today's show. Check out our Facebook and X pages for the latest news and views on our news. All of our Inside Track episodes are available at Apple Podcasts. Until next Saturday when we return again, this is Bruce Ash.
Eb Wilkinson.
Wishing you a very happy and good afternoon. Be sure to join us again in 166 hours.
Essential Pest Control leaves bugs belly up with science.
You mean you don't use a shoe?
No, we use the latest in technology and innovation to eliminate bugs, termites, weeds, and more.
No spray cans and lighters?
None of that. Only solutions that target insect biology, using chemistry to help protect the environment, people, and their pets.
Huh. Essential Pest Control leaves bugs belly up. Call 886-3029 or visit EssentialPest.com.
There she is. I see her. It's the voice of a goddess.
I'm gonna faint.
Today is today. And yesterday was today yesterday. Tomorrow will be today tomorrow. Today is tomorrow. And yesterday was today yesterday. Tomorrow will be today today.
Empress has no clothes.
He's right. I see that.
You know, at Perfection Auto Works, we see things that you may not be aware of. Since 1994, we give you the honest truth when it comes to your car. Next time your car makes crazy noises, call 323-8650 and perfectionautoworks.com.
This is Eb Wilkinson of Wilkinson Wealth Management, where we manage money for gun owners. Some advisors say they do everything. Take that with a grain of salt. In fact, take it with a whole salt mine. We specialize in guiding you to retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. We refer you to other services so that we have no conflicts of interest. Reach us at 777-1911. That's 777-1911 or WilkinsonWealthMGMT.com.